Hello and welcome to the Celtic Women's Football Show. I am your host, Claire Wilde, and I'm joined by one other person this morning, arguably the most Italian cynic. It's Lorenzo Pacitti.
Not arguably, I think it's without doubt at this point.
I know, I'm just saying it to wind Paul up.
Good morning, Claire. I think my voice is extra gravelly today. I think my mic quality almost makes me sound worse all the time because it makes me sound more hungover.
I think we're both suffering a bit with colds as well, so you'll have to excuse the kind of slightly gravelly nature of this whole podcast.
A very erotic podcast.
How have you been apart from having a bit of a cold and it being early on a Saturday morning?
Good. Had a busy week. Can't complain. I think I'm still in like a little buzz from the last time we were at Pennycars. It was such a great afternoon,
wasn't it?
I'm all excited.
Yeah. And you're going to be there tomorrow?
Yes.
I'm going to be there tomorrow. So yep. That's exciting. We're not going to explicitly preview that game today because we talked about it in the episode last week with Paul a bit. But yeah, there's lots of stuff been happening in the world of Scottish women's football and Celtic. First thing I wanted to just touch on, which is kind of non-Celtic related, is did you watch the Scotland game against the Faroe Islands?
I watched the highlights, the goal, which was what the highlights were.
I went with my mum to Hampden and it was great. It was her first ever time at Hampden. It was her first ever Scotland game and she's supported Scotland for as long as I can remember. So that was fun. But I kind of wanted to touch on, because there was a bit of chat in the Discord and stuff about the lack of Celtic representation in the Scotland side. What are your thoughts on that? Looking at the quality that you saw on the pitch, do you think that's something that just comes from the fact that like we just don't have the players, or do you think people are being overlooked? What are your thoughts?
I think the league, because Celtic Rangers have just gone professional only a year ago, mm-hmm. it's still such an unknown to the squad selectors. Yeah. I think it is, because the step up is going to be so huge mm-hmm. to some of the teams we play in this league, that I understand the trepidation to play maybe Celtic Rangers, even City players at this point, because...
Although there are quite a number of Rangers players in the Scotland side.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's how much women's football has become exactly like men's football in my brain, because like I don't really like the Scotland squad that much. I'm not that convinced by caring about the Scotland squad yet.
Yeah.
When the World Cup was on last time, I really cared.
Yeah.
I need a tournament buzz again, you know. Uh-huh. I've got players I'm very attached to. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like that with the Scotland squad. I think it'll just take some time until they maybe respect the league a little more, or players like Lisa Robertson come in and start, you know, really mm-hmm. playing well and really showing off, and they go, well, she was playing for Celtic, so there must be something in that league.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the fact that Lisa Robertson is in the side makes it automatically more attractive for me because she's one of my favourite players. I also, you know how you just get, like, weirdly, I really like Claire Emsley. I've just got a bit of a...
I really like Claire Emsley. I really liked her in the World Cup. She's just like a rapid winger. And I think when you know the players that well, seeing her in the World Cup, I was like, oh, okay, she's my favourite player.
Yeah. And I hate to admit it, but I really like Erin Cuthbert as well. But I think it's going to be like that was a World Cup qualifier, but obviously it was against opposition that we kind of knew that we were going to be able to beat reasonably easily. And it was kind of a bit of a goal fest. But I think, as you know, we've got Hungary coming up next, and then there's, Spain towards the end of the year, and then playing at Hampden in the new year, which will be really exciting. And it will just be interesting to see whether the new manager does, you know, he's Spanish, Fran's Spanish, whether there's any conversations going on there.
Spain's a scary one, man. That Spanish team is outrageous.
I know. So moving on, the other thing that kind of emerged this week, I've written it in pencil on my rundown because it happened after I wrote this rundown, was we got the announcement from Celtic that you can now buy a season ticket for the women's games, and you can also become a patron of the women's team. Let's have a conversation about that. What are our thoughts on that?
I mean, it's good. Like, we wanted season tickets. We were clamoring for season tickets. We've got them.
It's a bit late.
Yeah, I think it might fall this way for a lot of people. If they told me you could get season tickets back in... I mean, from a marketing perspective, you want to announce those season tickets before we go out the Champions League.
Yes.
Because people have Sundays free.
Uh-huh.
And if they're being super optimistic, they will always have Sundays free. So I would have bought a season ticket then, 100%. Even if it just before the season started, I'd have bought one. even just to say I had one and I was supporting the team. But now, because we're a couple of games in, you know, if you don't buy one, if you buy one before the game on Sunday, you save about the cost of two tickets, which is fine because, you know, it's not that expensive, but it just feels like, you know, as I said, there's going to be some clashes. So if you're a general Celtic fan who supports both teams, you're going to have days where you've got to pick and choose. So you're not actually worth getting a season ticket because you'll probably miss two games throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, it really highlights that clash, doesn't it? Because one of the reasons I'm on the waiting list for the season ticket, but again, you know, I was really aware when the fixtures were potentially changing and stuff. I was like, if I actually get a season ticket this season and I want to go to women's games, I'm going to have I'm going to have a choice to make whether I'm using the season ticket that I've paid 600 quid for or whatever, or I'm going to go to the women's game where I'm going to pay another £8 or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It just highlights the fact that that is a massive issue that needs to be resolved at some point. The thing about the patrons as well, getting people to support, I mean, we've had a little bit of chat about this in the WhatsApp since it was announced. I think we all have thoughts on it. It's really hard, isn't it? Because it's giving people an opportunity to support the women's team, but I 100% don't understand why the club can't get it into their head that that is not the message people want to hear. Like, they want to see the club leading from the front. They don't want to say, well, you pay for it, and then if that goes well, we might sort of, you know, back you up. Do you know what I mean? That's how it feels a little bit.
It's very business. It's very, you know, it's a pitch to businesses. It talks about putting your logo in the programs and stuff like that. So this is stuff that should be done behind closed doors. This isn't stuff that should be done like a pleading tweet or a random bit on the website. It is a bit scary to think that that might be how the women's team is funded. And again, if you're going to pitch it to, you know, normal fans like us to support the team as patrons, I like when kind of smaller clubs do this whole sponsor a player, you sponsor a player. You just feel that little sense of attachment fans might want to feel. But fans will go to the games and that's how they'll support. And if there's maybe women's team specific merch on sale, I don't really know other ways other than the games making us able to go to games. They can kind of squeeze money out of us, but that felt like a very business-led pitch that is not something that should be done in public.
Yeah, I think so. And it also, I think it was Aaron, I'm sure he'll correct me if I'm making his point wrong, but it does feel like something maybe that those so kind of small-scale sponsorships feels like something that amateur teams do, and it doesn't make Celtic necessarily look like a professional football outfit if that's the way that we're going and that's the way we're looking at funding. You know, you cannot get away from the fact that Celtic Football Club, even though we've just announced an £11 million loss, I think the general overview of that was it was less bad than we thought it was going to be, and that there is still millions of pounds sloshing around this football club, and it would only take a tiny percentage of some of that money to go into the women's team to make up what, you know, 10 of these patrons or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
How much was the patron thing? It was only like
195 quid.
Yeah, I mean, come on. How many patrons do we need to even pay for, I don't know, 1 week's operational?
You get 10 patrons, that's what, £2,000 or something.
Crazy. It's just nothing. It's absolutely nothing money.
Yeah.
Which is why it just feels kind of such an insignificant, weird thing and does make us feel quite amateur.
Yeah.
It's a strange one.
I'd be interested if anyone listening to this as well has thoughts on that. Because again, it's like the thing we echo every time. It's like we're being given something. It's like ostensibly there's forward progress being made, but it just doesn't quite necessarily feel like the right forward progress. Maybe we're looking for something a little bit more deeper level, a bit more structural. Rather, this feels a little bit maybe kind of surface level stuff.
And like judging the value of the actual patron thing, if you're a business, I think it just mentioned, you know, you kind of get your name next to something in the match. We don't have programs, we don't have our own advertising hoardings, we play at someone else's stadium. You know, we don't have a lot of opportunities for adverts or for sponsorships. So I wonder if it's even worth it, even though it's such a small amount of money to a business. Where's the added value for MD in this?
Yeah, I think the reason people would do it, and the reason, you know, like, it, say the Cynic as a business did it, I think it's to support the women's team. It's not because you're necessarily getting a huge amount out of it. And like,
that's the people that are going to dump the most in. You know, the people that want to exploit it, the people that think they're going to get the most out of it, they're sadly the ones you need to have on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is, so we weren't quite sure. We've got the game tomorrow against Hibs, as we said, we're both going to be there. And then we've got another fixture coming up. It's the rescheduled game against Motherwell, which is where we've had such a long break without a match to talk about, and why we're today going to do a little bit of a squad review. We had to wait quite a long time to figure out what was going on there. And then yesterday Motherwell came out and said it has been rescheduled. It's at Penny Cars, but it's a Motherwell home fixture. So that's because of a clash with something at their stadium. So they've now gone to Penny Cars, but it's also going to be behind closed doors, which I still don't really know what that means.
I don't understand. I mean, I don't get it. Because it's obviously at their home game, is the argument that Celtic shouldn't have, you know, the majority of fans in, because, you know, it's not like we're talking 60,000 fans in screaming and shit. Like, it's not like Rangers are playing a home game at Celtic Park. You know, it's fans of women's football, which is what they need all the time, and these clubs need through the gates all the time. I'm very confused as to why this needs to be behind closed doors.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it must be something to do with the expense of opening up the stadium or something, but I've been in touch. I've sent two emails to Motherwell in the last couple of weeks, and I've DM'd them on Twitter, and I have heard zilch, nothing about whether even we could get a press access or something. So fingers crossed. I'm not actually going to be around next week, but maybe someone will be able to go if we get access, but we don't know.
Well, my mum and dad live right next to Strathclyde Park, which is where I think Motherwell women team usually play. So I was like, I was quite into the idea of, like, you know, getting a free lunch and then jumping along and going home and getting a free dinner. But now it's fucking Penny Cars again, which nobody wants to go to, really.
Lorenzo's just in it for the free lunches and free dinners.
Right. I did eat three pies at the last, I know Paul Carlin outed me, I did eat three pies at Penny Cars, I think.
I didn't realise that. That's very good going. It was a very nice pie stand. It was very friendly as well.
They were so friendly, they'd upsold me two pies.
The other thing about that Motherwell game is it's on the same night as this, which is worth mentioning. The Edinburgh Derby between Hibs and Hearts is being played at Easter Road. First of all, that's fantastic news for the women's game in Scotland, to have a women's team playing at the main stadium. They've also been giving away their tickets for free. And the latest we heard on Twitter was that they've punted about 5,000, which is, like, extraordinary. And you'd expect that number to maybe go up a bit before Wednesday, which means that, I mean, because they're free, you'll always have a percentage of people that will take a ticket and maybe not turn up. But there was 4,500 people at Hampden for the international game.
Yeah, that's crazy. Those are crazy numbers. And, you know, again, there's always a value judgment in these things when you're trying to get people involved. And free tickets for one game. Mm-hmm. Is a really smart move. We saw City do it with the Champions League game. I thought Celtic might have done it with that first City game just because the team was back. We had fans back. It was really maybe a new kickstart for the women's team. Mm-hmm. But it works when people are semi-curious in something and you let them in for free, they come.
Yeah.
And when you can get them excited about something like a derby. And again, we're all very optimistic in the sense that we got offered this, you know, one women's game at Celtic Park in the season tickets. I'm assuming it's going to be a Rangers game.
Yeah, you think so.
No, so that might be an opportunity for us, if it's done right, to absolutely smash that number. You know, you're talking every season ticket holder having a ticket to a potential women's derby. If we punt that right, sell that right, if it's neck and neck in the league, that could be unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just because people love free shit.
I know, it's kind of the contrast of it being on the same night as the one where we're going to be playing and no one's being going to be able to watch it. It's kind of extraordinary. And I think that, you know, it is good overall that this sort of thing is happening, that Glasgow, I wish we were doing more of it, but, you know, if this sends a message to other clubs, if this sends a message to Celtic, if this sends a message even to Glasgow City to do it more, that we can do this kind of thing and the support is out there, then maybe, you know, it is a good thing for the game as a whole up here, because I think a lot of it is like this fear on the part of, you know, a tight-fisted board who don't want to spend money on something when they think that, you know, I thought it was good that we had 300 people at Penny Cars and that felt like a good crowd. That felt like we were all in the right direction, and I feel like a right mug if they get 5,000 at East Road. But do you know what
Celtic
I mean?
Yeah, Celtic Park, you know, north stand, lower only.
Yeah.
You can come close to getting that a little bit packed on like a derby day. That would be class because it's a beautiful stadium. It's a really nice stand. The players would love it. I think we saw even behind closed doors. You were there behind closed doors. How much?
I was at the last one for the press, and it was unbelievable. The atmosphere and speaking to the players even after, they were still talking about it towards the end of the season, weren't they? When you were asking them what was your highlight, you know, that game was just right up there.
Yeah, so I mean, that's just what we're hoping for. And hopefully, we get at least one night like that this season.
Yeah,
and then hopefully it becomes more and more regular. But it's really, really cool to see that Edinburgh Derby sell as well as it has, free tickets or not. And it does not matter like how they've given away the tickets, if they're free, if they're giving them out to big groups of kids, because it is all about the numbers, and it's to show people want to see, if they can see it, if it's very accessible, people will come out and watch women's football.
And I think it's people underestimate, you know, Paul was on last week saying that you do a very good job at dragging people along to games when they're maybe slightly resistant. So you should definitely be given credit for that. And Paul Carlin was one of those people. And he said, you know, one game in and he was already kind of, he knew some of the players, he was already kind of hooked and would definitely come again. So it doesn't take much to get people into it, especially if you create the right atmosphere. We are today, because we have kind of, we had the Glasgow City game that we've already talked about, and we didn't have a game because of the international break. We thought what we would do today is kind of run through a bit of the squad. We were going to try and do the whole squad. It's not going to happen. I don't think we've got time. but I thought today, Lorenzo, we would talk about our defence. We'll talk about the goalkeepers and our defenders. Just for people who maybe are less familiar, because you know, one of the things that does hold people back from being able to engage with the game is, you know, I was finding it with the Scotland game when I went to Hampden this week. You know, I know a few of the players, but I don't know all of them. And it's just about, you know, I was kind of constantly on my phone looking at squad numbers and seeing who'd done what. And it's, you know, it's not the easiest way to watch football. So, should we just get straight into it?
Let's go.
Let's go. So we've got two goalkeepers. Our number one goalkeeper is Chloe Logan. I've got my little fact sheets about them all here. So Chloe Logan, she's Scottish. She played for Celtic early in her career. Then she moved to Stirling University for quite a long period. And she came back to us in 2019. And she's pretty much been number one since then. She's 25. She's made 45 appearances for the club. And I think that we would say, like, she's 100% the first choice goalkeeper right now, isn't she? And what are your thoughts on Chloe Logan?
Yeah, for somebody who's 25 as well, she's got this really veteran air about her. Yeah. And again, maybe it's because we'll talk about Rachel Johnson, who she's next to. She really has a real presence. She's a real good talker with the defence. And just at the start of this season, she's made some outrageous saves. Mm. And the things we've been, you know, doing this podcast and watching her, she'll come out with some absolute crackers. And she's made one error in the time we've watched her. But when she did, we just forgave her because she has made some brilliant saves. And even against City, you know, we were worried about City because they started really strong. And it was like, are we going to get run over a bit here? And she made this flying save from a mullet and just drove the ball in the top corner. And everyone's just held their breath waiting for it to hit the back of the net. She just flew across the goal. So she just got this air about her. She feels like a number one. She's really grown into it as well since we've gone professional. I think she feels like she's taken the kind of trust in her very seriously. And I think she seems like she's really happy to kind of bear. I mean, when you're a goalkeeper, it's the hardest position on the pitch in terms of bearing responsibility. Mm-hmm. And she's very, very comfortable with that responsibility. And she's a great keeper. I don't watch enough of the other teams outside of when we're playing them, but I assume she's one of the premier keepers in the league.
Yeah, I think that was one of the, you know, obviously Lee Alexander is the number one for Scotland. And I think that there are people out there who think that Chloe Logan is a contender for that position as well. you know, we've put on this list when we're looking at positions, obviously goalkeeper's a little bit different because Fran's not going to play them anywhere else apart from in goal, you'd like to think, although knowing Fran.
Never know.
Yep. But, you know, you've mentioned already there, like, personality and attitude. She's has got that kind of, like, leadership quality, and we've seen her have excellent communication as well with the back line. She's really good at that. In terms of sort of the type of goalkeeper she is, how would you characterise her in terms of, you know, we've talked a lot recently about, you know, Joe Hart coming in and getting the ball out quickly, and, you know, he's made a huge number of passes with his feet and stuff. How would you characterise Chloe in that regard?
I wouldn't necessarily say Chloe's super comfortable with her feet. Almost in the way I thought Joe Hart would be. I think she's encouraged to play with her feet quite a lot because it's a Fran system. I don't get the impression she's super comfortable with her feet, but what she is good at is realizing when she's, you know, really under pressure and has an awareness that she's not that good with her feet, and she will just toe the ball at the park, which is good because I think when you give players responsibility to play a passing game at the back, it's all on them to know when, you know, it's done, when it's broken down, when it's not worth it, when you toe the ball away. But she's a short stopper, you know. I mean, I think with a lot of women's keepers, you know, not all of them are going to be the tallest player on the park, just because of the nature of the game.
Yeah.
So, but she is, a lot of them are just short stoppers, but she is, she doesn't hold too much. She likes to punch things away. She is just a short stopper. Mm-hmm. And again, like we've seen with, you know, the Craig Gordon at his best and Boric at their best, when you play for Celtic, the most important thing is that you can make these big impact saves and get the ball away. Not necessarily that you're super, I wish we had more reliable goalkeepers in general, but not necessarily that you're some sort of like safety blanket, but you come up big with these big moments, these big saves, and Chloe's been doing that for the past year and a half for us.
Yeah, notably the penalty save in the Champions League, which must have been a great moment for her. The person that is sort of vying for her position has just signed a professional contract. So the other goalkeeper we've got in the squad is Rachel Johnston. She is kind of an interesting one because she's still young. She's just turned 18 and she's just signed this professional contract, which is fantastic. She's from Lewis. So one of the things that's always talked about with her, she's, you know, she hasn't got a club history outside of Celtic, but she's done all this travelling, like her dedication to kind of Celtic and to the football club, and to kind of, you really get the sense from Rachel that like she wants to compete for that top spot.
Yeah, I mean, she's been given a lot of chances by Fran for somebody, like, again, I forgot she was just, like, she only turned 17 in March or something, I think, which is crazy because she's been about
She's literally just had her birthday, so she's 18 this week, I think.
Okay, wow, okay. Still. Been, you know, a lot of
I might have got that wrong because there was a flurry of birthdays.
Yeah, I read like a big list of birthdays and tried to zoom my eyes through it there to find out when she was born. But, you know, we swapped the keepers during the league season, which is kind of mad, but it shows again how much he likes Rachel. And I think Rachel's a little bit more comfortable on the ball. Rachel's got, and I think she, while she doesn't have that veteran savvy of Logan and talking to the defence, she is very vocal as well. She gets really, really involved. She seems very well liked around the squad. Again, the good thing about the women's team being quite fresh new is that we do see a lot of relationships between the players, and we see a lot of them get on and stuff like that. And she seems like a, for somebody so young, I mean, I know the team is pretty young across the board, but she seems to really get on with everybody. And that defence, actually, that defence is a lot older than the rest of the squad.
Yeah. We'll talk about the defence in a minute, but I think you're right. And I think that, you know, you talk about changing out the keeper and how weirdly, like, it's sort of, it doesn't bother me that much when he does it because I think that we have all seen her do her thing and like know that Fran has made a choice to play her in certain games. I think, you know, the big ticket games, he's going to put Chloe in goal if we're playing Glasgow City, if we're playing Rangers, those kind of high pressure environments at this point, because, you know, Chloe absolutely deserves to be there. But I love the feeling that they're in competition with each other, but they've also got this kind of little camaraderie together. The two keepers clearly are a little team together as well.
Yeah, and keepers always have to be. You know, there's the goalkeeping coach, and then there's usually, in like a men's team, you'd see three keepers, maybe even four keepers in a full squad. And if they're not, you know, together, if they're not a little unit, like a little goalkeepers union, you know, the competition could become a little toxic for the team. But that's why you need to have keepers that think they're going to, you know, they'll have a chance to play, keepers that feel under pressure, but not that, you know, one error means they're done. And I think we have that. I still think even though we only have the two keepers, it does feel like competition. And I mean, Chloe Logan, you know, she can play every game. She's over the hill. She's 25 now. You know, that's, she's past it now. Play every game. So it's good to have a young, sprightly backup in there as a, with this 18-year-old.
I think as well, for people who are less familiar with watching Celtic women and listening to this, you know, it would, don't be surprised if you see a different keeper in different games. For example, I think that it wouldn't surprise me at all if Chloe plays in the Hibs game and then Rachel plays in the Motherwell game on Wednesday.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's move on to the defence. So the first person I want to talk about is Jodie Bartle. So Jodie Bartle, let's give her the... She's come up to Scotland from England. She has been with two clubs previously. She was with Peterborough Northern Star and Loughborough Foxes, neither of them professional teams. So she, Celtic was her first professional contract. She was a PE teacher before that. She is 29. Her squad number is 3, if you want to look out for her. She has made 24 appearances and scored 2 goals for the club, which for a defender, that'll do. General overall sort of thoughts on Jodie, Lorenzo?
Head case. I am a massive Jodie Bartle fan. I think she's such high energy. And again, for a lot of games that were behind closed doors last year, you needed people like that in that squad to get people amped up. She's committed, like she's so committed to every tackle. She must be knackered when she finishes playing. She's got something.
You say she must be knackered, but I think her fitness is extraordinary as well. Yeah. For one of the older members of the squad, I think her fitness is right up there.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's a really great professional, obviously. She's pretty versatile when she plays as well. She's played kind of, she's played every position in the back line for us at some point, I think. She's really great to watch. She's up and down, up and down. She doesn't stop. And yeah, if you want to see some like hard, full-blooded tackles, just keep your eye in the right-back position for Celtic.
Yeah, and she moves quickly, doesn't she? She, you know, takes a shy and just gets it done. She gets things done kind of at pace, it feels like, when you're watching her.
You want to talk about communicators? I mean, she's screaming the whole game at everybody.
Yeah.
And probably people in the crowd as well, and maybe the linesman or whoever's in our view.
Talking about her position, I've put on the rundown for this when we're looking at players' best position versus where Fran is playing them. So you've said she's kind of played across the back line. I think she was put in the middle against Glasgow City in a back three. That felt like a new thing for her and it didn't feel hugely comfortable. It felt like that was still something that she was really having to get used to. Where do you like to see her play best, Lorenzo? And where do you think that we should be expecting to see her when we watch these games?
Right back, 100%. I think she's a great right back. I was a little confused by her playing the middle of the back three. I don't think it worked that well, but I just don't think the back three worked that well in that game for the first half. But I think when she shifted out after that, you know, towards the right-hand side, she was able to, because she's great at like tracking down wingers because of her fitness. You know, people don't get a break from her. Mm-hmm. You don't get, sorry, quite hungover. You don't get the last minute of, the last 20 minutes of the game and a winger who comes on as a sub thinks they can get some purchase at the fullback because Jodie Bartle does not stop. I think when you take her at that right back position, you lose that up and down, which we also get on the other side, which we'll talk about. But she's just, her main attribute for me is her engine and her ability to win the ball.
Yes.
So she's always best on the move for me. So I like her as a right back.
Yeah. And she's kind of assumed a bit of a leadership position. She just assumed that quite early on. She's kind of got that air about her, hasn't she? So, you know, when the squad was in its formative stages.
She's got all the best attributes of a teacher.
Yeah, actually she has. So yeah, hopefully we see her more on the, in the right. Although if you listen to the wee clip that I asked Fran about that, the format, how he set up against Glasgow City, and he clearly has some thoughts, and I think we will see more of that back three going forward. I don't know whether we'll see Jodie in the middle again and whether she might start to feel more comfortable there, but we will just have to see about that. The next person I want to talk about is Caitlin Hayes, another English player who has had spells. She had a spell at Everton. I think that was maybe her first professional. She went to Cyprus, so she got Champions League experience when she played for a team called Barcelona FA in Cyprus, which is confusing. But she came to Celtic when Fran came, because obviously he came from Lewis down in England, and she was a player that had already worked with Fran at Lewis, so she came from Lewis. She is 26. She plays number 18. She's made 22 appearances for us already, and she scored 3 goals, one of them which was a header against Hibs, so fingers crossed she can do that again at the weekend. Yeah, thoughts on Caitlin Hayes? I mean, we all know I'm a huge fan.
when she's kind of the ideal Fran centre-back, which is obviously why he was so adamant he had to bring her up. She's good on the ball. She moves the ball forward when she gets it. She's always looking for a forward pass. She's a great athlete. She's a really, really good frame for a centre-half. Uh-huh. She's really athletic. And she gets up really well to win headers. Defensively, she wins, you know, anything put near her. And you'd like to see her score more goals, maybe, just because when she attacks corners and she scored, it looks like it's so easy for her. Yeah. I think we've just been maybe a little bit unlucky with some of them not coming off. She's had a lot of good headers from corners saved or just over the bar and stuff like that. So maybe stuff like that starts to balance out and realign, and she ends up getting like 10 headed goals a season. You could see that happening. But yeah, she's just a super athletic, reliable, committed centre half. Her best thing for me is just her ability to win any ball in the air or a ball that gets fired in. That can be really tough for centre half. Sometimes they can get their, you know, you've got to have your feet sorted. You've got to have your awareness of wherever there is around you and when the ball's about to drop. And she just seems like she's been doing that for years at a good level. So she seems very, very comfortable when balls get launched forward. And teams are going to do that against us, you know, play super direct. So we need centre halves that can cope with super direct balls. She's just been dynamite for us since she came.
Yeah, and she's, you know, you talk about she's sort of renowned for heading the ball, and she's got that fearlessness about her as well. And also she's, I think she's probably one of the tallest members of the squad as well. So she's got that on her side. And, you know, she's able to progress the ball as well when she needs to.
Yeah, she's a bit of a, I don't want to say Virgil van Dijk, but that's an extremely high pressure comparison. But no, when in our team, we need our centre halves to carry the ball, but immediately, you know, look forward. She seems, obviously she's worked with Fran before, so it wasn't much of a change up for her. So she's just been a great signing, and hopefully she sticks around.
Yeah, I absolutely hope she sticks around as well, because I love watching her play. The next defender we're going to talk about is Chloe Craig, an absolute favourite. I mean, we're big fans of all these players. sound like an absolute fan club. But Chloe Craig is a really, she's an interesting one. I mean, if you'll sort of spot her because her hair is very blonde. So it's kind of easy to spot. But she has played, so she's basically played her whole career at Celtic, but she's 28. She's, you know, she's a huge Celtic fan. She's like the kind of long serving. She takes the captain's armband when Kelly's not on the park. She plays in the number 6 jersey. She's made 211 appearances at this point for the team, and she scored 70 goals, which for a defender is pretty, you know, she's still right up there with like an absolute essential for us, isn't she? I don't actually know the percentage, but I'm guessing a high percentage of those goals will be penalties, because she's generally our nominated penalty taker, isn't she, Lorenzo?
Yeah, and she doesn't really miss ever really too much. she's like, she's as essential as it gets. Again, she's part of the furniture, and for a club that's newly professional, having players like that was such a bonus in that first year. Players that had been around the place, that could bed everybody else in, and that were really high quality footballers who just didn't have the professional tag next to them, you know?
Yeah.
She's got an incredible, like, long ball on her, Craig. And there were a few games last season where she made, I can't remember what game it was, we won like 5-0, and Craig set up like 4 goals with like really deep crosses. Mm-hmm. She really, for somebody that can really attack a ball really well and is one of our taller players, you kind of want her putting everything in. She's got a really, really, really good service on her. But she's very similar to Hayes in that she's comfortable on the ball. For a centre half, she's probably one of our better ball carriers in the team. And you can always rely on her. But I think with Hayes coming, they work so well together, because I think they are quite similar players.
Yeah.
Hayes is a bit more like all action. Mm-hmm. Chloe's just really super, super composed. You can really trust her on the ball. They've been great together, and she's just key for this team, and I can't really imagine this team without her.
Yeah. Where do you think, I mean, we've talked about the rejigging of the defence and how, you know, we were so secure in it last season. We felt like there was this kind of steady back four that we were playing. Where do you think she's best suited in the back line? Because she has been being moved around. And actually she said, and we might release a clip of this as well, or if anyone's listened to the press conference that went out yesterday from the club, I asked her about the kind of fluidity of Fran's system and how she has adapted to that. Because I was going to talk as well. It's kind of incredible that players like herself and Kelly, who've been around for a long time, you know, they've kind of seamlessly made this transition to professional football. It's amazing. But also she's having to get used to Fran maybe playing her out of her usual position. Where do you like to see her best?
Probably centre half. But, you know, I'm thinking of some of her best games. And a couple of her best games were when she was kind of shifted out to right back, which is really weird because she should be very unnatural. I think, again, she gets such good service that when she gets, wherever she's playing defensively, when we have the ball, I want to make sure she's on it quite a lot, and I want to see her starting moves from the back.
Yeah.
But I guess I would say centre-half because I like that partnership with Hayes. I think the two of them are good together. And, yeah, she's reliable, so centre-half I will go for. But she's one of those players I do really kind of, she's got a genuine versatility about her where it doesn't feel like she's doing a job. It does feel like you're getting the best of Chloe Craig, wherever she is.
Yeah, her answer to that question about the adaptability was like, she sort of said she quite enjoys it. She's up for the challenge of, you know, moving around and playing in different places. But just because we're on Chloe, let's move on to talk about Kelly Clark, our captain. Kelly has been with the club for a long time. She was with Forfar Farmington before she came to Celtic, and I've put 2012 question mark because, as we know, it's tricky to sometimes find exact information. And I've actually interviewed Kelly and we were trying to work out her timeline. And she actually was like, I can't actually remember. All I know is she won Young Player of the Year in 2014. And I think she also got quite quickly promoted to captain. She's 27. She wears number 15. She's nearly at 200 appearances. She's on 198 at this point. And she scored 26 goals for the club. Interesting thing about Kelly is we see her, you know, she's listed on the website as a midfielder.
Mm.
She sort of plays both, doesn't she? Talk us through the enigma that is where Kelly Clark plays on the pitch and what you think you like to see from her.
I like to see Kelly Clark as a centre half. I think that's where she's best. I think she's a phenomenal captain. I think when you see really good captains, it's really evident on the park. She's a great captain. She's a massive, big game player. She'll score big goals when we need them, even as a centre half. She's super, super reliable in these big games. And we saw even last year when, you know, she was out the team a lot for league games, and it was that Hayes and Craig centre half pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Clark come in for the big games.
Yeah.
And she'd do really well. You know, we'd always preview it and be like, you know, we don't want to see that partnership split up that we've enjoyed so much at the back, but you cannot trust anyone more than Kelly Clark in these big games. As far as her playing midfield goes, I think she's super reliable and she's a good passer of the ball and stuff, but she is somebody I think you start to lose some of her qualities by moving her around. Mm-hmm. I think she's such a really good centre half, and maybe her reliability means that when we need extra defensive cover, she can play like a holding midfield role.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I think it ends up kind of diluting the Kelly Clark experience.
Yeah. I don't doubt that we will see it more this season. I'm sure Fran's going to put her there. I think maybe part of that is as well, we'll talk about the midfield and the forwards in a different episode because we're not going to have time to cover it all on one. But I think that the midfield, you know, the transfer window wasn't as strong as we maybe, you know, the key players that we lost were from that area. So maybe that's why Fran is moving her up a little bit to bring someone who's got that experience and who's got that ability to maybe sit a bit deeper in the midfield and move the ball through to that position. I don't know if that you would agree with that, Lorenzo.
Yeah, particularly for like a defensive midfielder. You know, we lost Lisa again, who's someone of massive experience. And like exceptional quality, so it makes sense that Clark would be his go-to because there's just not a lot on the bench that is in that mold. So I understand it, but hopefully we rectify that the next chance we get in the transfer window and we get some
yeah,
bodies in because our centre mid we are quite light.
And the myth, the legend that is Natalie Ross will come back at some point, but it's almost like, do we believe in that anymore?
Well, I keep forgetting that Natalie Ross exists, which is mad because she's such a good player and we've just got her to come back, but it's been so long.
Yeah. We'll talk about Natalie Ross, as we said, in another one, but you know, Natalie's also the oldest player in the squad by my little spreadsheet. So Kelly is sort of indispensable. The other interesting thing to note about Kelly is that she is doing all of this, playing professional football, leading the team, doing all the stuff that surrounds it, promoting the club, doing all that kit launches and stuff while having a full-time job as an accountant still, which is kind of extraordinary. I literally don't know how she does it.
No, we talk about how she's such a great captain. It's just because she seems like the ultimate. Again, for somebody that's newly in professional football, for how long she's played, she's the ultimate professional.
Yeah, absolutely. Who else have we got left to talk about in the defence? We have got a new player who we might have a little bit less to say about because we've not really seen much of her, which is Cheyenne Shorts. So she's come over here from the USA. She was with Orlando Pride, but she came to us from St. Etienne, I think, where she was on loan. She's 23. She plays the number 4 on her jersey. She has made 3 appearances only so far. I think, have they all been off the bench?
No, she started the game where she put a beautiful pass to Wellings.
You know, you're right. I've put number of starts and she's got 1 start.
Yeah. Was that the first game of the season? No.
I don't know. I haven't got that in-depth information.
I remember that.
But yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think Cheyenne, we don't know where she fits yet, maybe. And maybe it'll be interesting to see how Fran uses a new player like that in a defence that feels quite established.
Yeah. Again, just from what we've seen of her and what we know about her a little bit, she seems like somebody who could play in a back 3. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking about that assist she had for Welling, she was playing on the right side of a back 3 and she played a really direct ball to a really direct runner in Wellings, and that seemed like she seemed like a good fit. It seemed like that's the kind of was like almost training ground move, which is what you want to see. And mm-hmm. if he's going to stick to a back 3, and even looking at the squad, God, sorry, my throat's killing me. We've got
we're both falling apart, by the way.
You know, we're pretty late in the fullback sense. If we had a couple injuries or whatever. So I think the back 3 might be the kind of, at the very least, the safety valve. Mm-hmm. So she'll definitely have a role to play, I think. And she's got a decent pedigree, you know, for 20. Like Orlando Pride, good team, playing in France. These are, you know, exciting things to hear.
Yeah, I think it's just what, she's one to watch, isn't she? The other thing I do find is because the way she wears her hair, you know, you have that thing where you're quite far away from the pitch and you kind of recognize people by certain things. When the new players come in, sometimes they confuse me because I'm used to looking for certain things. And I confuse her for Kelly Clark at times. But yeah, watch out for that one. The last one we're going to talk about is your friend and mine, Chloe Warrington. Little smile on your face there. Chloe she's from Scotland. She's exclusively played at Celtic. She is only 19, again another youngster. She plays with number 22 on her shirt. She's made 23 appearances for the club. She's not a goal scorer, but that's fine. She plays at the back, and we've seen her to do some amazing things to get the ball into the goal. It's sort of, while I'm on that, it's worth noting, I think I went through this list I've got of the core squad, and 6 of them have only been at Celtic. So, you know, we've got a good pedigree of like bringing these youth players up through the ranks. And I think that Chloe Warrington is a really prime example of that, isn't she, Lorenzo?
Yeah, as far as we've been watching, she's the shining star of the youth setup. She's great. You know, we were raving about her all last season. She's really comfortable on the ball when she gets stuck in little corners in her own half. And we control the ball most of these games. So she's somebody that really knows how to step up. And, mm-hmm. you know, we don't really have wingers that come back too much, unless it's like Tegan Bowie, who plays every single position on the park and never stops. But Chloe is somebody who's super reliable. Again, like Jodie Bartle, she's clearly very fit. And for a 19-year-old as well that's new at professional football, that's really impressive and good to see. And she's only going to get better. She seems like somebody that just grows every game. And the more experience she gets, the more she kind of learns and she soaks it all in. But just as somebody with as technical ability, just watching her, she's great on the ball and she's got a really accurate pass. She's really, really, really good feet when she's in trouble, which is great for fullbacks in a system like this that's about keeping the ball and playing the ball at the back and then finding avenues forward. Fullbacks are the ones that can often get caught out, can often give the ball away. Not naming any names, Greg Taylor. He is very reliable when she's at the ball because you just think if somebody harasses her and somebody, she'll just go by them or she'll pull the ball back, she'll keep it safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's somebody I hope, you know, is like the next Chloe Craig, Kelly Clark, and she's here for a long time and she kind of grows with this club because, you know, she could be the real feel-good story of going professional, bringing a youth player up and it just all working and clicking and
yeah,
she could be a real star for this team for a while.
I mean, already this season, she feels like she's gone from being, you know, a younger player who comes in to cover certain games to she's, I think we've played six full competitive games and she started four of them. So she is someone who's going to, we're going to see a lot more of. And like you said, she's just got that kind of, she wants the ball and she wants to kind of, she's not afraid of anything. She's a bit, like you said, Jodie Bartle on the other side. We're more likely to see her on the left, I think, than on the right. And she, you know, that I would advise anyone to go and watch the Mariah Lee goal against Rangers at Celtic Park if you can find it on YouTube, because, you know, the way she gets the ball, the way she just fires through and runs past the Rangers, she just bounces it off her chest, doesn't she, and runs forward. It's just extraordinary. I absolutely love it because it's just really bold. So yeah,
she played on the right against City, and like she started right back against City, which is wild.
And what were your thoughts on how she did there?
I thought she did okay. I think she's been so good on the left. I think when we were under the cosh a little bit, you know, it's easy to say, God, she should be on the left, you know, everyone's out of position. But you know, she didn't put a foot wrong, really. It was just, I think some passes weren't on for her or just things weren't working for her because she's got a great relationship as well with players like Tegan Bowie down the left.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot for her. Like, a fullback to swap sides is about as big a transition as it gets in terms of versatility.
Yeah.
So I was impressed with how she coped with it, but I want to see her on the left and I don't really want to see her anywhere else. I think she could play. She's got that technical ability. I think she could be comfortable anywhere in the park, but she's got such a great impact at left back. I'd never want to see anywhere else.
There are certain players that when you think of them, you just think of them on a certain side of the pitch, don't you? And you kind of, it troubles you when they move because you're like, what? I think that pretty much covers it in terms of the core of our defence, would you say, Lorenzo? We've got other players in the midfield that we'll go on to talk about who maybe play somewhat of a defensive role. But again, I think maybe the midfield feels like it's somewhere that we've got maybe a bit of work to do in terms of understanding what people's roles are. And we will talk about that at some point. How do you feel that the defence this season matches up? We've said it before, we're very complimentary of them last season. We thought that we had a lot of trust in what they were able to do. Do you have that same level of trust this season?
I think we've obviously leaked a few more goals to start the season, but we also didn't start, you know, last season. Or sorry, we grew into last season. You know, it was the second half of the season we were phenomenal. And I think, regardless of there not being too many changes at the back, there are just new people all over the park. So I would give any defence some time to bed in.
Yeah.
Even though it's the same players. So I'm hoping we get back to kind of that 100% ironclad clean sheets coming, maybe hopefully starting tomorrow. But again, I think with the way we play, as long as we're playing well and we're not losing or drawing games, I'm not going to complain too much about the defence.
Yeah,
I do trust the players in it.
I think that maybe some of the goals as well, the fact that we have conceded some more goals than we might want to have come from this, the fact that Fran is, you know, creating these kind of almost two systems. He's now going with this back three or the back four, depending on who we're playing and what players he's got available to him. What do you want to see tomorrow? Do you want to see us go back to the back four tomorrow against Hibs?
Yeah, I think so. I do trust Fran, and I trust these players to get the job done. Hibs are a good team. Hibs are, you know, probably the best team we play outside of the big two. So it's a tough game. He's got to play his best squad. So again, it depends how it's been going in training, because, you know, we're judging this back three shift that happened against the champions, you know, not against other teams in the league. So, and it's early days in the season, so he could be totally right and feel really confident in it and want to keep playing it, keep playing it, keep playing it. And then we go, if we're going to run like we did the second half of the season and we're totally comfortable in this formation, then we're flying, because, you know, we were trying something brand new against City and we got a point off them, you know, the 14 times champions, whatever they are. So I'm quite happy to see, as usual, I'm quite happy to see whatever Fran wants to pull out and surprise me with.
It's nice that we trust the manager, isn't it?
Yeah, for a back four, I do like Celtic in a back four. I like the Celtic team in a back four. I think it just lends a bit of, because we trust players like Chloe to carry the ball from defence and we trust our centre halves, I always do feel pretty comfortable in a back four.
I
don't feel like we're losing anything. I don't feel like we're losing any solidity, really, because I think sometimes when you're not comfortable in a back three, it's very much like a too many cooks type scenario where these direct balls kind of just get lost in between players, or runners running between split two centre halves, and it's just a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
I like a back four.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that we could maybe say about the defence this season as well, and it's probably similar last season, actually, but it just it was fine, but that maybe the... what am I saying? Resource-wise, maybe we could do with a little bit more depth in terms of being able to bring people on, or if, you know, are there any players that, you know, we've seen it happen in the men's team recently. You lose a couple of key players and you suddenly go, oh shit, like they are crucial to this. Do you think there are players in that defence who, if they're not there, then we might be in trouble and that we maybe lack a bit of depth?
Yeah, if you lose any of our three centre-halves, you're losing a big, big player. But if we are going to be playing a back four, the nature of us having three centre halves we really trust means that we could maybe do without one of them. I think you are taking, for each one, you're taking something massive out of that team. If you lose Chloe Craig, you lose her delivery. Like, they've all got a little X factor. If you lose Hayes, you lose just that ball winning ability in the air. If you lose Clark, you lose your captain. So yeah, it's worrying, but again, touch wood. I'm touching the... fake IKEA desk in my room. You know, we should be okay, but you know, there's no real, and Cheyenne Shorts looks, you know, she looks like a decent player from what we've seen so far.
Yes,
but you know, the fullback positions were very light. I think we've got a couple of kind of wingers on the left who could definitely do a job at left back, but you know, if we lose Jody Bartle and we want a right back or right wing back, we're, you know, it's a pretty tough,
it's a tough call, isn't it?
To kind of move something, like, we talk about the players needing to be versatile, but to replace somebody like Jody Bartle's energy without like a like-for-like right-back would be quite a shift and a really, really hard thing for the team to cope with.
Yeah, I completely agree. Little mini preview of Hibs, so we've talked about it a bit already. We'd like to see Fran playing a back four. They are currently top of the table, but the table is kind of all over the place with rescheduled fixtures and stuff. I think I was working it out, and I think it all kind of gets back to everyone having played roughly the same number of games on like the 6th of October. So we're a wee away from that. But I don't know what I was trying to say there. By that point, we'll kind of have a bit more of an idea of where everyone's sitting points wise. Again, it's going to be a really tight league. And Hibs, you know, this is the Hibs team. They've had a lot of changes. They, I think, are maybe kind of shifting gears a little bit and moving up to the next level. So we are facing this early in the season a team that we really don't know what to expect from them.
Yeah, and we've had really hard games against Hibs last year as well. Really hard games. And they, you know, they really feel up for it when they're playing us especially. I mean, I was at one of the games at K Park against Hibs, and they were up for it. Their manager was terrifying, and they were just and they put us under so much pressure, and what told in the end was our fitness, you know, being the pro team. That was one of those games we were really struggling to break them down a little bit. They were super in our face, they were really aggressive, and it was only in the last 15-20 minutes that they started to wane because their fitness wasn't quite matching ours, and Frank kind of turned the afterburners on, and we scored, I think, two in the last 10 minutes. Yeah. But we're going to have another tough game tomorrow, and it might be another one of those games. It might be another tough first half. So I think people need to be ready for that. I'd love to see us get an early goal and just settle the team down and make Hibs have to come out a little bit. But they have good players. They are, as you said, they look like they're taking the next step. So everything's pretty positive at Hibs. So it's going to be a really tough game.
Yeah, and I think I'd like to see us really coming out of the traps really quickly tomorrow, just making our mark. In, you know, without, I know one of our specialities is kind of doggedly fighting and winning it at the end, but I really don't want to see that tomorrow. I don't want to see a last minute goal from a corner or something. I would like to see us go, you know, one or two up reasonably early on if we possibly can. I know that people always want to see that, but I think...
Let me enjoy my halftime three pies.
Yeah. Yes, Lorenzo needs to eat his pies. Yeah, they're an interesting team. And, you know, I always think back as well to that game that they had early in last season where we beat them by, like, we scored six against them. I think it was 6-1. And all the players came off going, we didn't play well. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Such a different, yeah, they really improved like over the course of that season.
Yeah.
I do remember that game. It's been quite funny how depressed all our players were.
It's like you just won 6-1. We all thought you did really well. But I think it just goes to show as well that, you know, Hibs is clearly a team that does, you know, we're going to have to take seriously. And it will just be interesting to see how that works tomorrow. You and I will be at the game. I'm very much looking forward to it. I will see you there. We'll be taking some pictures and giving some updates. But this has been great. We will be talking about more of our players at some point, hopefully this week. But I need to talk to the big boss before we decide when that's going to be scheduled in for. But Lorenzo, this has been great.
Chris Gallagher hates women's football and doesn't want to schedule this show.
yeah, it's been lovely. Thank you very much for getting up early and talking to me on a Saturday morning when we're both feeling a little bit under the weather.
I always like that we do this on Saturday morning because we're either everyone on the call's hungover or two of us are just out of bed. Or usually if Brian's on, Brian's been up for 14 hours.
And he's already been to the gym. yeah, it's been great. Thank you very much for listening. I've been with Lorenzo Pacitti. I've been Claire Wild, and this has been the Celtic Women's Football Show.